Each week, nearly a dozen movies are released theatrically. 40 films a month, more than 400 a year. That's a plethora of cinema. Too much cinema. You'd have to be an addict to see all that, but don't fret. We've got you covered. This is Cinematics.
Hey everyone, what's up? It's a new week of Cinematics. This is episode 234. Our weekly mission is to find hopefully some cinematic gems, either for the movies that are opening on a given weekend, this weekend being March 22nd, or maybe we found some kind of gems through some of our friends or maybe through our personal searches. I feel this week we have some to steal from Eric. We have a whole bunch of bangers. Box of bangers. What's in the box? A whole bunch of bangers. I'm Greg Srizavasti. I'm joined by Eric Holmes and Bruce Perky. Eric Holmes, do you agree or disagree with me regarding this being a box of bangers this week?
Yeah, I would say so. And even the bad ones, I have, like, the ones I have issues with, still pretty good. So, yeah.
All right.
And we got an all-timer today during the recommend. So just heads up on that.
Okay, so all-time recommend. Bruce Perky, do you agree with what we have as far as just bangers this week or some really good stuff to provide our listeners and fellow cinephiles / cinematics folks?
Yes, I would say there's some good to great, I would say. I have some problems with a few of them, but I don't think there's many that I wouldn't recommend to some degree.
Okay. Any stinkers this week, Eric Holmes? I'm looking at our Google Doc right now.
Not really.
Okay. All right.
Well, some of the ones I have problems with are still good. So there's none that I watch. I'm like, never again. Well, one maybe, but yeah.
Okay. Maybe.
For the most part, they're all good in some regard or another.
Okay, would love to hear what you guys think of the movies we review this week. And I'm not going to go through. I think there's about 7 or 8 movies we're going to be covering this week for episode 234. Before we get to our features, let's go first for our Patreon. This month's Patreon, we will be recording next week. The two movies that we're spotlighting for the year 2007 is number one, Elite Squad. Thank you, Ryan Smith, Patreon member, for that recommendation. We will be watching Elite Squad. I forgot the name of the director, but that director did a remake of what, Eric Holmes? What did that Elite Squad director do? A movie you like?
Oh, what is it? He did the remake of RoboCop, movie everyone except me hates.
Okay, so you actually, did you like it or did you love the remake, the reboot?
I liked it a lot. I liked it a lot. I was not on board with the RoboCop remake when I first heard of it, but I went and watched it anyway. And I was like, dude, if you're going to do it, like, it's not as good as the original, but if you're going to do a RoboCop remake, you know, this is the way to do it, you know, take a different approach to it. And I really appreciated it. And yeah, no one else did. So
we'll see. Maybe there might be somebody. I can't believe you might be the only person in our God's green earth. Is it okay to say God's green earth? Can we say that? We're not reviewing Cabrini this week, but no, look, there must be more people other than Eric Holmes who loves the remake of RoboCop. Hit us up if you are a fan of RoboCop, the remake. But anyways, that director, I forgot his name. He is the filmmaker behind Elite Squad. That's our first pick for Patreon next week. And the second pick is the Sidney Lumet film, Before the Devil Knows You're Dead. Eric has put that he's already seen it. I guess this will be a rewatch for you, Eric Holmes, for next.
Yeah, I haven't rewatched it yet, but I've seen it a couple of times.
Cool. So, all right.
Excuse to watch it again. I'm fine with it. Oh, Jose Padilla. Yeah.
Padilla. Okay. Jose Padilla. Okay. Thank you.
RoboCop guy.
Thank you, Eric Holmes. And then again, the director for Before the Devil Knows You're Dead is one, the late and great Sidney Lumet. Lumet is a big fixture in our Find Your Film Cinematics universe. We've reviewed a whole bunch of films and a whole bunch of Lumet films. That said, there's still a whole lot of Lumet films we have yet to get to. Bruce Perky and Eric Holmes did a review several episodes ago of the Lumet film Prince of the City, which Eric Holmes was a little bit lukewarm with. He still recommends it. I believe he gave it 3.5 stars because it's a high bar for Lumet. And Bruce, I believe, if I recall, I really enjoyed Prince of the City. But again, before the Devil Knows You're Dead, Elite Squad for our Patreon. We're also going, after this recording, we're going to do a spoiler discussion of Sleeping Dogs, the latest film from Russell Crowe. I was listening to Eric Holmes' interview with Sleeping Dogs director Adam Cooper, and he described used to describe the movie as a, quote, great mystery. Let's see if, well, Eric Holmes says it's a great mystery. Let's see if I think it's a great mystery. Let's see if Bruce Perky. My money is Bruce Perky thinks that Sleeping Dogs is the best movie of the week. We'll see where that bet lies. My instincts on humanity that Bruce Perky just lapped up everything about Sleeping Dogs. We'll get to that in a second. Right, so we're going to do a spoiler talk. Are we going to do any other spoiler discussions? Eric Holmes, are there any other movies that we should talk about spoilers after recording the show? By the way, these spoilers will be uploaded for our Patreon members and then maybe a week or two later for our Cinematics YouTube channel.
Folks, are we members. Talking about The Artifice Girl later on? Because if so, absolutely that one.
Okay. Eric Holmes has a tie vote. We will be doing a spoiler discussion of The Artifice Girl. We're going to get to that review later on in the show. So The Artifice Girl and Sleeping Dogs will be our spoiler talk for our Cinematics Patreon listeners. It's a $5 catch-all. What you get from our Patreon is every single week, there will be maybe a couple movies you might want to see in theaters or on digital. Me, Bruce, and Eric, we provide some spoiler stuff right in your Patreon feed. So you guys get early access to our spoilers. I say a couple of weeks later that these spoilers will be released to our Cinematics YouTube channel. That said, I am about 2 months behind on our spoilers. I haven't uploaded anything yet to our Cinematics YouTube channel as far as spoilers go. So Patreon members, when I say early access, you get really early, early access because a lot of the stuff, look, I haven't even uploaded our spoiler discussion of, what was that movie? The movie Monolith that we did maybe a month and a half ago. I was supposed to upload it 4 weeks ago and Monolith is coming out on Blu-ray in a couple of weeks. So anyways, yeah. So that's what you get from being our Patreon member, $5 catch-all. One more thing, a very close friend of the show. Look at that. There's a spider. I got to kill the spider. Kill the spider. I killed the spider. That was, remember the spider thing, Bruce? About last week, I hate spiders. Remember, we did a.
Oh yeah, that's right.
That was in a
we
bit.
Did talk
yeah.
about that.
Hopefully, I killed the spider.
That spider could have helped you through some emotional problems. You should have kept it around for a little bit.
But if you don't want it around, don't feed it Nutella because it'll just keep coming and basically become your therapist.
Right. The spider was a reference to Spaceman, and again, it was not a big spider; it was just a very little spider. And I think I used my slipper, and hopefully, it is dead. He or she is dead. I'm a spider killer. Our buddy Anderson Cowan would have probably put that spider in a cup and released that spider to the wild. But if you're an insect and you're living in my domicile, you're usually, as in the Filipino term, Tagalog means death. It means patay. You're patay in Tagalog. You're if you're a spider, you're dead. But what is alive? There's a lot of things that are alive. There's sleeping dogs. There's you'll never find me. We're going to get to sleeping dogs in 1 second. But before we get to that, I will end the spider discussion. But on a serious note, friend of the show, very close friend of the show, Angie Clark, her granddaughter, Cosette, she messaged me the other night. She actually went for another surgery and she's in the ICU right now and she's recovering. And what happens is her daughter, Rachel, and her son-in-law, I believe his name is Aaron, they've had to take a lot of work off just to spend time with their beautiful daughter, Cosette. And Angie Clark is just a very big part of our Cinematics family and our thoughts and prayers. And most importantly, our just friendship is, she's a very close friend. So I'm going to put a GoFundMe link just for her daughter and son-in-law to help them out if you can. And Bruce and Eric, you want to say anything about Angie Clark and Cosette, the family?
Yeah, I love Angie. Never met Cosette, obviously. Actually, never met Angie either, not in person. Right. But she's has a lovely family. The stuff that Cosette's going through,
very
pretty scary, not fun. And much like anything, medical bills are expensive.
Yes. Yes.
And like even when you have insurance, you know, you still got deductibles and everything and the time taken off work and like, yeah. We live in the richest country in the world and we can't seem to figure out the medical care thing.
And right. Right. Exactly.
It sucks. But that's the world we live in. Hey, vote for the lesser of evils. That'll fix it. Right.
Yeah, I talked to Angie Clark the other night and she said, please don't put that GoFundMe link. And I said, no, of course, you are a friend of the show. And Cosette is as cute as a button and her family is our family. So definitely, if you want to support a really wonderful person and her beautiful family, our GoFundMe link will be on our Cinematics show notes for this episode, episode 234. Now let's get to our features. Sleeping Dogs. I'm going to stop for about, actually, I think me and Eric, we're going to take a siesta here. because Eric has been watching movies all day, cramming all these movies in, things that I used to do back in the day as of like maybe 3 weeks ago. For some reason, I don't know what, I've taken the Bruce Perky turn and I've actually started watching these movies in due time, but Eric has taken the Greg Srisvasi horrid turn where he watches like three movies in 24 hours. Eric needs a break. I need a little bit of a break too, because I've been yapping about. We're gonna give Bruce Perky, hates me now. Thanks. Yeah, no thanks. No, you can thank me later because you're gonna tell us about Sleeping Dogs. I'm kidding. Okay, look, I'm gonna get to Bruce Perky in 2 seconds, and he's gonna commandeer this review of Sleeping Dogs. It stars Russell Crowe. He plays Roy Freeman. He's a sort of a retired detective. You know why? Because Roy Freeman is suffering from early onset dementia. He's having memory loss. Thing is, there is a criminal from his past who requests a sort of audience with him, and he goes to the criminal. The criminal's in jail, and the criminal, Khan, says to him, "Hey, guess what, Roy? You need to get me out of jail because I never committed that murder, okay?" And Roy's going, "What are you talking about? This, you did this?" And he said, "No, you got to get me out of here. I'm going to be dead here in prison. You got to save me." And that, so begins this sort of familiar tale, because last week we did Michael Keaton, a Michael Keaton movie where he played a hitman who's having dementia, another dementia-filled movie, this time not Michael Keaton, but Russell Crowe. While he's suffering from his mental loss, his memory loss, he's still trying to figure out whether or not this person in jail is innocent or guilty, and he goes back and tries to figure out this investigation, which reportedly may have gone south years ago. Also in the cast is Tommy Flanagan from Sons of Anarchy. He plays Flanagan. Yes, Eric. I love Flanagan too. He has a meaty role in this movie as Roy Freeman's partner, loyal partner. Karen Gillan from Guardians of the Galaxy, she plays sort of a femme fatale, very intelligent, beautiful woman, and she has her own place in this story, which goes in the middle of the film. It is a Russell Crowe movie, but what's interesting is this mystery sort of turns everything on its head, where you get sort of a mini movie in the middle of the narrative. And we're going to go to Bruce right now, talk about Sleeping Dogs. What did you think of the movie?
Well, this isn't necessarily my cup of tea, this kind of neo-noir. It's not as overheated as it could be. But, okay, first of all, you know how it's kind of a writing crutch right now? Like, if a person is writing some kind of a story and they can't figure out how to get around cell phones, they'll just make it in 1985 or something, or they'll make it in 1975. It's like, oh, now we don't have cell phones, so I can have a bunch of plot things happen that wouldn't happen currently. I think that this dementia memory thing is becoming one of those little writing devices, because we sure have had a lot of those. It's an aging A-list actor gets dementia and has to solve something. It seems to be a weird subgenre that's kind of around and about right now. Because we also had another one with, who do we have one? We had another one, not just last week, but there's one way before we had to. It was Memory or one of those movies we watched. Anyway.
Yes, I think Liam Neeson, right?
Liam Neeson, yeah. That's the one, yes. So there's just been a weird spate of these. Anyway, the way this movie kind of works, I guess, the way I would look at it is, because you keep seeing like a name of a character come on the screen, and then you have like a little mini story of that character's version or play in the events that led to this maybe wrongful conviction and death row of this guy. To me, I think the way I look at it is kind of like, you know how you see those murder boards that the detective set up, where they put up a picture and they start putting strings and connecting everything? So essentially, that board is getting assembled as you're watching this movie. So I guess your enjoyment or non-enjoyment will depend on how much you are engaged in those various stories. I was in and out on those. I was half engaged in some and not very engaged in others. I had mentioned to you offline that I am now convinced, after a few different movies, that Karen Gillan is typecast as the cyborgy character in Guardians of the Galaxy, because I haven't seen anything since that shows that she can act her way out of a paper bag. And she is distracting to me every time I see her now. That being said, I quite enjoy Flanagan.
I love Duel, Bruce. I love Duel.
Well, in Duel, supposedly she did a great job, but she played the same role in both parts, which made no sense, because she was a clone in one part and a human being in the other part, but she was a clone in both parts. Whatever.
Eric and I were going to buy you a 4K bouquet of gunpowder milkshake pretty soon. I'm going to send to your address. See, make you watch it with your eyes open like scanners or something.
I haven't watched that one, so I don't know. Yeah. Anyway, I know I'm kind of the minority there. Flanagan, love it. Whenever I see Flanagan, I'm like, I wanted more Flanagan, and I wanted more Russell Crowe. I wish I had the Pope's exorcist Russell Crowe instead of this Russell Crowe, because he was reined in too much, I think. I mean, I know why he was reined in, but I kind of wanted to let him to be unfurled a little bit more in this movie. Overall, I would say it was fine, but it didn't really engage me too much.
Okay, well then I think there might be a flip side to this review. I'm hoping, Eric, that you really enjoyed this movie. You called it a great mystery in the interview, so... Is it a great mystery? What hooked you into this Sleeping Dogs?
I think so. But I think a lot of what Bruce said is kind of agree with a lot of it. I think where I diverge is I like the concept that Russell Crowe's character, he's got dementia and he's going over a case he already went through. And in doing so, he's starting to find out how bad of a cop he was. Who made these errors? Oh, I did. I'm the one that was on this case. I'm the one that flubbed this case. And then as he's going on, the door kind of keeps opening wider and wider. And he starts becoming more and more aware that he was not a great cop to begin with.
That's not a spoiler, right? Is that a spoiler?
No. Okay. I mean, you figure that out within like the first 10 minutes. Like when he starts getting like little clues on the case. And he knew that he worked on the case before. But he wants to take another crack at it. As he goes along, he's like, oh, I cut these corners here. And then Tommy Flanagan comes in and it's like, you know, you get the sense that Tommy Flanagan's like, it's basically a dirty cop looking at his own work from the outside. And that's what I saw most of this movie at. And then, you know, it comes to a head, but that's kind of the mystery element that I like. I like that it's a mystery on someone else's past as they're discovering their own past.
Bruce, no spoiler. That's not a spoiler that he's a corrupt cop or he's made mistakes. What do you think?
I think that right off the bat, he starts discovering things and wondering like, why would I have not followed up on that? Or why didn't we follow up on that? And he's discovering he didn't follow up on those things. So I think it calls into question. I guess I would kind of ask, if he could forget all the other things, how does he know how to be a good cop? I guess there's a lot of, once again, it's selective use of this trope, which that's what I mean. It's a tool just to make happen what happens, you know?
I kind of get that, but at the same time, like, you know, if you're following up on something and someone says something, if you're a corrupt cop, you're going to ignore that or just not follow up on it. If you're actually interested in what's going on, it's like, wait, you said a thing. Oh, like, what's that all about? And they say, I don't know. You tell me. I told you all this before. Why didn't I follow up on it? You know, that sort of thing. So I think with him not being that same person that he was when he followed up on it the first time, now he's going through the same detective or the same following up on the same same thing, but he's doing it from a different lens now. He's doing it from a lens of someone that's interested, someone that actually gives a crap whether or not this case is solved. Whereas before, maybe he was, maybe he wasn't, likely not, because you know, corrupt cops do what corrupt cops do.
Yeah, I don't know. Okay, all right. Sleeping Dogs. It comes out March 22nd. And it's 100 minutes. I loved it. Neo-noir. Thought it was really, really good. Cheesy at times. And I was fine with the cheese. The Karen Gillan stuff. In the middle of the movie, there is a mini story where she is sort of a femme fatale. And she's intricately... There's a murder. And the murder is... I'm not even going to say who gets killed. But there's some very interesting characters in the middle of the movie. And it sort of becomes its own story. So you see the movie from the vantage point of actually a struggling writer. Which is interesting. And Russell Crowe is sort of not on screen for about maybe 10 minutes, it feels like. And it goes in different directions. And I like the ending and I like the twist, even though you could tell the twist from a mile away. Also, for our spoiler discussion, we're going to talk spoilers. And then what do you say, Eric?
I would say that the twist kind of got me, kind of pulled the rug out from under me in a way. But I think you're not wrong. Because, like, looking back, it's one of those twists that happens, like, oh, I should have figured that out, but I didn't. So...
Okay.
I would call that a good twist when it can do that. It gives you all the pieces, and maybe you pick it up, maybe you don't. I didn't. So.
All right. And I don't know if I think I told Eric this maybe a week ago. I don't know if you remember, or maybe I didn't even tell you. I'm like Russell Crowe and Michael Keaton. I might be suffering from some kind of memory loss, but Bruce, I didn't tell you this. With my interview with Adam Cooper, he talks about the ending of Sleeping Dogs, and I will put his spoiler stuff on top after our spoiler discussion of Sleeping Dogs, and he has a very interesting stuff. There's a very interesting scene that was left on the cutting room floor, which alternated the ending of Sleeping Dogs, and we're going to talk about that during our spoiler discussion, and you're going to have the Cooper comments as well. I love Sleeping Dogs. I'm giving it straight up 4 stars right down the middle. A strong recommend. If you love neo-noir and don't mind those cheesy suspense thrillers from the early 90s, which I eat up like slop, yeah, I think you might like it too. So that's four stars for me. Bruce, your rating?
I'm 2.5.
2.5 for Bruce Perky. Eric, what's your rating?
I think, like, on its face, this is probably a 3-star movie, but I love the angle that they took with Russell Crowe's character. So I'd probably go 3.5 on this. Could even go 4 stars. I wish they would have leaned in harder on that, because it's such a great concept of bad cop, memory loss, doing their thing over and realizing, oh, wow, I really sucked at that. It'd be cool to see another movie of this type that really kind of leans into that a lot more.
Okay. So that
but
is out.
As it is, this is a pretty good version of it.
Okay, cool. Solid recommend. 3.5 from Eric Holmes. Bruce Perky, not a recommend. Almost close to a mild recommend. 2.5. I'm giving it 4 stars. Sleeping Dogs, again, out in theaters March 22nd. I guess it's sort of a sadness because Bruce Perky loved The Pope's Exorcist so much. I wanted him to really love Russell Crowe as the detective with memory loss. Who knows? Maybe we'll find something with You'll Never Find Me. Maybe Bruce Perky will find something with this. It centers on an isolated man played by Brendan Rock. He's living in the back of a desolate caravan park. He has a mobile home. Very dark and dingy, and you see him at the beginning, he's maybe holding a whiskey bottle, or I forget, is it half full, and there's a glass, and he's going to drink some whiskey, and then there's also some clear liquid that he has, and you're thinking, this guy might be in a suicidal state right now. That's where the movie starts, okay? But then there's a knock on the door, and there's a mysterious woman, played by Jordan Cowan, and she is soaking wet because they're in the middle of a storm. She needs some help. She has no shoes, or feet are muddied, and she just wants to call for help. And for some reason, he is very apprehensive because she's a stranger. She's apprehensive of him because he's very introverted and he looks a little bit creepy and he doesn't seem like a very sociable, friendly guy. So the rest of the movie has them feeling each other out as far as it's sort of a chess game, cat and mouse game. Should the man trust the woman? Should the woman trust the man? Should she take a shower? Should she warm her clothes by the heater? Should she eat the soup that he makes her? Should she do this? And should he trust her? What?
That was soup? They gave her a bowl of ketchup.
right, exactly. So, yeah, that is the premise of You'll Never Find Me. It's directed by Josiah Allen and Indiana Bell. Indiana Bell also wrote the screenplay. It's streaming exclusively on Shudder Friday, March 22nd. I absolutely loved You'll Never Find Me. It is a slow burn thriller. And for me, it just checks off all the boxes. The third act is pretty much wackadoodle. I really love the twist. I really love the execution. The prohibitive thing for You'll Never Find Me is, if, dear listener, if you're not a fan of slow burn thrillers, it might take a little while to get there. But if you are a fan of stories that unfold at times, glacial pace, because you're stuck in a room with two people. The camera's going to pan left or right. It's going to do a close-up. If you don't like that pacing, you might not like the movie, but I ate it up. I love You'll Never Find Me. Here it comes.
It's like Heinz ketchup. You put it sideways and just wait. It's going to take a while for it to get there.
100%.
But it'll eventually get on your hot dog or hamburger or whatever you put ketchup on.
Exactly. Eric, let's say you had the hot dog. Did the ketchup go on the hot dog the right way you wanted it? Was it a good meal for you?
The ketchup actually fell on the floor for me, but I will say, man, sure is going nuts. But anyway, the slow pace normally kind of bugs me in movies, because usually when they go slow pace, it means we don't know what the story is. We're trying to figure it out, and hopefully we do. But this one felt like it had a tone to it. And even though it was going slow, it had a tone that I really liked. Real similar to My Heart Can't Beat Unless You Tell It To. You know, it looked like that. It had that same kind of pace to it. And it felt like it was going somewhere. And the whole Brennan, the bad one, is Jordan, the bad one. Like, there was like that kind of, like, neither one of them completely trusted each other. And therefore, I didn't trust either one. I'm like, okay, I don't know which one. Like, you would think Brennan would be the bad guy. But then why is Jordan there? And Jordan's there. Maybe she just walked into the hornet or the spider's web, you know, not sure which one it is. So plan on that. And they milked that for all it was worth. And I was there for it. I think the ending kind of rolled my eyes a bit at that. But getting there, the journey to get there and the tone that they laid out, I was really digging a lot.
Okay, Bruce Berkey, did the ending, were you rolling your eyes as well like Eric Holmes? Or were you fine with the ending? And were you fine with the movie?
I was fine with the movie. I actually was kind of surprised by this movie. I did not expect it to like it as much as I ended up liking it. The ending is a little bit, I don't know, predictable is quite the word, but it goes in a way that you could suspect, I guess I'd say. But I really didn't have a problem with that, because so many times, and I think Eric would agree with this part, whether he liked it or the ending or quite or not, so many times these kind of movies leave you with like, well, it could have been either thing. We don't know. It's ambiguous, blah, blah, blah. This movie at least says, we're going to answer your questions. Whether you like those answers to the questions or not is another story, but we're not going to leave you wondering what was happening here. It tells you what's happening here. And I really appreciated that. But even more so, what I think is, and I think all of us seem to be kind of agreeing on this, is that there is a really interesting tone created here and a really subtle use of like tension. And actually, I think kind of a good script. There's some really interesting dialogue between these two characters, and the sound design and this, the really meticulous way the camera is used in this movie, because you're essentially in a mobile home for this whole thing. But
mobile home I've ever seen.
Yeah, right.
From the inside.
But they use that mobile home in really interesting ways. I mean, for example, the whole time they're there, they're pretty much mostly in the front room kitchenette area, but there's a hallway, and you go down the hallway and there's bathrooms and stuff. At the very end, it seems to be a bedroom, but it's made so it's kind of like that dark hallway, kind of like you would see in like a David Lynch or something, where you can't quite see the end of that hallway, but you're hearing things. You're like, is there someone down there? What's happening? It causes you to constantly be both have anxiety and also curiosity about what's going on. And like you said, the interplay back and forth, obviously she should be worried. She's in some strange dude's place in the middle of nowhere during a storm with no particular way to get out of there. Obviously that's a pretty obvious threat, right? But on the other side, he keeps asking her questions like, where did you come from? And her story keeps changing a little bit.
It doesn't add up.
She doesn't have shoes. He's mm-hmm. kind of like, the gate is locked. Wait, how did you get in here? There's a lot of stuff like that going on too, which I think is really interesting. I kept thinking of the first third of Barbarian.
Yes.
It has some of that energy. Also, even though you're in the mobile home, sometimes it felt to me like you're like on a boat in a storm at sea. Like felt so drifty and weird. And I really like the tone and the moods put on here. And I think these filmmakers are showing a lot with a little, you know what I mean? Like, they have very little to work with and they're doing a lot with it. I could be very, very curious to see what these filmmakers do with more budget and more scope. I would have a lot of promise out of these two.
They're in a mobile home and I didn't feel closed off for the entire, 95 minutes. I didn't feel like hemmed in. Or like, get to the ending already. I'm really, really bored. The only way the world opens up is sort of a flashback to a car window with rain, right? And someone peering into it and you can't see that person's face. And whenever the door is opened, that's the only outside world you get to see in this film. But I didn't feel claustrophobic or hemmed in as well at all. I just felt anxious because I was tense about what's going to happen with You Will Never Find Me. This is a huge wreck. I really, really love this movie. Currently, on Rotten Tomatoes, it's at 93%. I'm not a Rotten Tomatoes critic, but I'm just going to say right now, that rating suits me, because I'm giving it 4.5 stars. You'll Never Find Me. By the way, I forgot to add Sleeping Dogs right now is at a really high level rating of 25%, but this one, 93%, where you'll never find me. What about you, Eric?
25%? Come on.
I know, right? I know. Eric, you and I, yes, I agree with you, Eric.
So, get on Rotten Tomatoes and clean house.
All right. What is your rating?
Well, so a couple things real quick. The ending, there's two endings. There's without saying what it is, there's the thing that happened, but then there's the end ending, like just right before the title mm-hmm comes up.
Yeah,
I love that end titles. It reminded me a lot of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, where it's like, oh, it's Once Upon a Time in the West or whatever, like Quentin Tarantino likes to do that. And then it gets to the end of the movie, and then it does Once Upon a Time in Hollywood in a certain font, and I'm like, oh, this is a fairy tale. Okay, now the title makes sense. Like the whole time I'm like, you'll never find me. I don't get it. But they place the title at the very end at just the right time where I'm like, oh, okay, I got you. That was pretty good. But the ending I said I didn't like was something we talked about in the thing, and I won't get to here. But yeah, this is a 4-star movie. I think with a stronger ending, probably could have been 5 really easily. And I agree that any movie that these two make, Josiah and Indiana, I'm there for. Oh, and one last question. Jordan Cowan, any relation?
No? Andy? Anderson Cowan? Yeah. Anderson should see this. Maybe it's a long-lost cousin from, I don't know, from I don't know. Yeah. So, Bruce, your rating?
I'm 4.5 stars on this one, too.
Yeah. 4.5 stars. Me and Bruce, 4.5 stars. Eric, slightly lower. Still 4 stars. we all loved it.
But 4 stars, nothing to sneeze at.
We're nothing to sneeze at. There's no way. Yeah. And there's no splitting hairs here. We enjoyed this movie. Streaming on Shudder, March 22nd. Okay. Eric Holmes and I will take literally a siesta. I am going to mute my mic. Eric will mute his mic. And then we're going to go treasure hunting with not Bruce Perky, but with Kimiko, the treasure hunter. It's celebrating its 10th release this Friday, March 22nd. By the way, it's celebrating its 10th release, but then it's going to be on demand April 22nd. And it centers on, well, Kimiko, played by Rinko Kikuchi. And she is a Tokyo office worker who believes there's buried fortune in Minnesota. So she finds her calling to find that buried treasure in Minnesota. Thanks. And she believes the clues are hidden in this VHS tape that she has. It's directed by David Zellner, written by David and Nathan Zellner. I interviewed David Zellner 10 years ago in offices over in West Hollywood, and I told him how much I loved Kimiko, the treasure hunter. Obviously, I should have loved it more because unfortunately I was not able to do the rewatch with you, Bruce, and at all. So I can't help. All I know is I really love this movie. I love the score. Don't want to talk about the ending, but I thought Rinko Kikuchi, great performance. You're going to flesh it out. Go for it.
Yeah. So I'd never seen this movie. This is one of those movies I've seen images of, and I've heard about it, and I was interested in watching it. But I think up until now, for a while, it's been unstreamable. I do believe you had to buy a copy somewhere, which I don't even know how easy those are to get, because it was probably a pretty small indie release. I don't know. First of all, this is probably not one I'd necessarily recommend to Eric. This could verge very strongly on indie porn, but then again, he might like it. Yes. So probably the first third of this movie is her in Tokyo living a very kind of a solitary, depressed life. You know, she's office worker. She's constantly deciding whether she's going to spit in her boss's tea. She's never really part of the group. She's just not doing great. Her mom wants her to move back home. She doesn't want to do it. All she has is her little pet rabbit, and that's pretty much it. But like you said, she's obsessed with Fargo. And of course, there's the scene in Fargo where the suitcase gets buried in the snow on the side of the road next to the fence. And she has this VHS copy, which is just almost unwatchable. It's so like blurry and weird, and she's trying to map it out and figure out where it is, which if you know that movie is absolutely impossible. Like there is nothing in that movie that would tell you where that briefcase would be if it exists.
White with a couple poles.
Pretty much.
good luck finding that.
Yeah, and she's trying to figure all this out, and let's just say one way or another she ends up getting to America to go search for this. And this is very loosely, from what I could research, this is very, very loosely based on kind of fact. Not really. It's as much fact as Fargo is at the beginning of the movie. I think they make a point of showing that little opening blurb at the beginning of Fargo. If you know, every Fargo version, including the series, starts with that based on, this is a based on fact, which is obviously part of the joke that it's not based on fact. This is one of those travelogue movies, right? This is a movie where you have a character and you basically follow them as they go from place to place and encounter people on their journey. And the journey, the destination doesn't really matter as much as the character and how they are interacting with people on the way. So your enjoyment is going to vary based on that. It's a lot about her isolation. And the one thing that I really liked about, so I liked this movie. I didn't love it, but I could see why people would love it. The one thing I really, really liked about it is you basically have a depressed character who's just trying to give herself meaning with this journey, right? But surprisingly, people keep interjecting into her life, and they're all trying to do right by her, which is very surprising. Because this is one of those movies where everyone could basically be, well, we just saw it, Io Capitano. No one's trying to do right by them. Everyone they encounter is basically trying to use them and use their innocence and their need for their own gain. And this movie keeps having opportunities where that could happen, but basically the reverse happens. People are trying to help her in one way or another. So that was refreshing. For me, I'd probably say it's 3.5 stars. It's a little slow. It's a little, like I said, a little indie porn. It takes its while getting there, but the path of her character and just wondering where it's going to lead and where it does lead, I will just leave it at that. I think it's a worthwhile watch, and especially if you like these kind of movies. If you like these kind of movies, this could be your favorite movie. This could be your favorite movie in a long time. For me, it's, like I said, 3.5 solid, and it could grow on a rewatch because this feels like also like one of those movies where when you know the story, you don't care about the story as much as the interactions, and you might be more, like there's an interaction she has with a police officer, which it's funny, there's an offline conversation happening on Cinematics about how all police officers are bad, and this is like one of the best police officers I've ever seen in a movie. Whether he represents reality, he represents that reality, so.
Oh, okay, yeah, so look, like what Bruce was alluding to, it is inspired by the real life story of Japanese woman. Her name is Takako Konishi. So if you watch Kumiko the Treasure Hunter, go to Wikipedia, look up Takako Konishi, and you'll find some interesting stuff about her life and the myth behind this whole thing. So, but don't look at it before you watch this movie. It's so important that you do not look at her life before. Again, this movie, I haven't seen it for 10 years, but it's like Bruce was saying last week when he was reviewing Spaceman, and when I was tearing that movie down, he said, "It's Spaceman is a vibe. This movie is a vibe, and it's mood, it's atmosphere. If you get into it, if you fall under the spell of the Zellners, you're all in for it." But then I remember even 10 years ago, as much as I love the movie, I don't know if I would recommend it to everyone. It's not a highly universal recommended movie. This is something, if you're in that Kumiko, the Treasure Hunter lane, you might really fall for the movie. So, yeah.
The only thing I would add is that this is a movie from the outside you might look at and say, oh, this is going to be a real quirky, like a real quirky kind of Wes Anderson kind of movie. It is not that.
No.
This is a very muted and grounded. It's not full of quirk. Put it that way.
Yeah, Zellners, they did that movie several years ago, Damsel, with Mia Wasikowska and Robert Pattinson. Loved that Western, and I thought that Western was going to be a big hit. What, hardly anybody saw the movie, and I don't know. I still think that's a treasure of a movie, even better than Kumiko the Treasure Hunter. What do I know? Moving forward, Late Night with the Devil. It hits theaters March 22nd. What do you want to say about Late Night with the Devil? David Desmalchian, he plays a mid-1970s late night talk show host. His name is Jack Delroy. Jack Delroy, his main rival is Johnny Carson. It's sweeps week, and it's specifically October 31st, 1977. He will do anything to get better ratings and possibly beat out Johnny Carson, at least for one night. The only way he can do that is having a late night talk show with the devil. And a lot of this movie takes place in real time as we see Jack Delroy have... His talk show host is called Night Owls. And in Night Owls, and this episode, he has different people. Who does he have, Bruce? He has sort of a medium, right? And yeah, a young girl who might be in a state of who knows what. You don't know what her mental capacity is, what's inside her. There's also a person who is a supernatural debunker, and he's there just to poo-poo everyone's theories about the supernatural, about the devil, about all that stuff. So all of this is to garner ratings. That's Jack Delroy's main focus. And this movie set in 1977, really good production design. It's an indie budget, but great performance by David S. Malchin. And it definitely goes places. That's an underrated comment. It goes so many different places. It's very immersive. And I was right from minute one to the end, I was really into this movie a lot. This is going to be a rewatch for me. Bruce Perky, Late Night with the Devil.
Yeah, this is one that I heard a lot of buzz about, especially in the last couple months. I think it came out like a year ago at South by Southwest or one of those Fantastic Fests, something like that. But I'd heard a lot about it, and the poster's really cool. It has a cool retro poster with his character, Jack Delroy standing there like on the set, you know, on fire, and it's got the little photos. It's done in old style poster, you know, style. I would say the strength of this, well, there's a couple strengths. The strength of this movie is its reproduction of the 70s late night talk show look and format and everything like that. I will say that overall, I had a level of disappointment in this movie. I guess I had really high expectations, and for me, it kind of fell slightly short of those, although I still recommend it. For me, the problem is it reproduced that 70s late night show so well. But one thing I really don't want to watch right now is a late night 70s show. Like that part was almost too good. Like it was almost dull for the first hour for me, or the first half, I guess, not first hour.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. I was just like, okay, yeah, there's that. I mean, there's a level of predictability to this movie. I think that's a problem for me too, as a horror fan. Like, okay, it's Late Night with the Devil. They're going to have someone and something demonic's going to happen. Okay, cool. Now the stuff that did work. Oh, and another thing that really didn't work. So they have this thing, supposedly, this is the footage of that show, plus lost footage in between during the ad breaks that they filmed, which that stuff totally didn't work for me because I didn't believe there'd be any reason for them to film the stuff that they showed. They were showing them filming like private conversations off to the side. Why was there a camera crew filming this private stuff off to the side? That stuff totally rung false to me. And they should have figured out a way to do that. They should have figured out a way for them to be offset and then their microphones were still on and we could hear them, but we couldn't see them. You know, something that had believability to it within that world. But the good stuff on this, I think, was, first of all, the Ed McMahon character, his sidekick. No. Was probably the most abused sidekick character in late night history.
That guy
loved that stuff.
Reese Autery, he has only two movie credits to him. He pretty much steals the show. He's so good in that movie.
Pretty much steals the show. They should have, honestly, they should have leaned into that more. There's the Amazing Randy character guy. I didn't like him too much because he was what he was. And I was like, okay, I get his character. I just wish throughout that it surprised me more. It really didn't surprise me much. I had fun enough with it. But honestly, by the end of it, to me, this was just a VHS segment that was way too long.
Oh my,
you know,
gosh.
It was a decent VHS segment, way too long.
Yeah, this movie. Oh, you and I completely disagree on this movie. I just fell.
I am definitely in the vast minority from what I've seen online. People love this thing.
This movie proves to me that David S. Malchian, we all three of us knew this already, that he is a leading man. He is so good in this movie as Jack Delroy. He really carries it. And as far as the late night stuff, I was really immersed with it. Bruce, you have a really good point though. That does not make sense. Why would the camera crew film the behind the ad break stuff? I understand that. Maybe they should have shot it in a more different kind of film grain, make it look like a real cut from the actual.
Well, there's no reason for them to be filming it. Like, why would it be filmed? Yeah.
That's an interesting thing.
There was even a part where it was like, which camera do I look in? None of them. We're on break. Yeah. Like, he literally says cameras are off. The cameras are supposedly following him.
It was so on point with this recreation and with the setting of how it was setting it up. It had to solve for that problem. It had to figure out something.
I would say though, like, I agree with you on that. I just kind of let it go. That was like a, same. You know, that was a suspension of disbelief. What really bugged me about this a lot was the James Randi character. Mm-hmm. Cause they definitely played with the James Randi, debunking Uri Geller, I think, or Peter Popoff. Like if you look up James, there's a documentary about James Randi, and I cannot remember the name of it, but just look up James Randi and you watch this, you'll see like a lot of crossover. The thing is, I don't think the people making this movie understand what James Randi was trying to do. He just comes off as a, oh, why do you gotta be such an ass? Like, just let them believe what they want to believe. Never mind that James Randi's character should be looking at that kid going, you're exploiting that child, mentally messing it up for your own desires, which in the context of this movie, that's not the case, because turns out if you do James Randi, but what if it's real? James Randi acts in a completely different way. If you start, you know, if he starts testing supernatural claims and you start passing those tests, he's going to start leaning in a little more going, okay, this, I mean, we still got a testes, but like, this is starting to become very interesting now. Mm-hmm. He wouldn't cross his arms and go, no, no. It's in a world of anti-science, we have people still believe in a flat earth, deny Holocaust, deny climate change. Like, there's plenty of anti-science to go around. There's plenty of charlatans that will pay you to talk to your dead loved ones and exploit you in that way. We don't need, our society is not mature enough for a character as poorly written as the skeptic in this movie. That said, it's entertaining as hell to watch. just like David Dismalchian. Look, if he wants to host his own late night show, I'm there. I did like it watching it as a Twilight Zone episode, but just the fact that that skeptic was written so poorly, like, that bugged me, but it didn't take away from the fact that I still enjoyed watching it.
Okay, Late Night with the Devil again, Friday in theaters, March 22nd. 100% currently on Rotten Tomatoes, 70 reviews. We'll see if it stays there. Possibly won't, because you can't keep it 100%. It's hard, but 70 reviews is not so bad. I'm giving Late Night with the Devil, loved every single minute of it. No flaws for me. I mean, this is almost a 5-star film for me, but 4.5 stars, entertaining as heck. Bruce?
3.5, and it might go down.
Oh, okay. Might go down. Eric Holmes?
I'm going to go 3.5, too. Similar to Sleeping Dogs Lie, I enjoyed it, but like, there was just stuff that really bugged the hell out of me. And whereas Sleeping Dogs Lie is like, I liked where they were going. I just wish they would have went harder. This, I wish they would have taken more time with the characters, but I'm not entertaining to watch for sure.
Okay, let's go to our recommends. Quick thing, Driveaway Dolls. Eric Holmes, just quick thoughts on it. It's a Coen Brother movie. Not Coen Brother, it's one of the Coens directed it. Our Cinematics film Facebook group, they really hated this movie. There's some reactions about how this movie doesn't work. What is this movie for you? What are your reactions?
I think the interesting thing about watching this and watching The Tragedy of Macbeth is like, we only have one movie from each of them solo. Well, this one was written by Ethan Coen and Trisha Cook, but directed by Ethan Coen. But it's kind of neat to watch this in a sense that you start saying, oh, that weird part, that weird trippy part in Big Lebowski, that must have been Ethan's idea, you know, just based on what I'm seeing on this. Oh, these certain lines that are quips that characters in past Coen Brothers movie, that must have been an Ethan Coen line, because, you know, it's not great, but there are some funny things. Specifically, Beanie Feldstein?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Beanie Feldstein.
What was that movie she was in? Everyone was talking about and I never saw.
Oh, right. Was that Booksmart?
Yeah. I need to watch Booksmart now, because she's freaking hilarious in this movie. I love her in this. The other Margaret Qualley and Geraldine Viswanathan. Yeah, I like their back and forth, but nothing groundbreaking. I mean, Beanie Feldstein's the reason to watch this, and apparently Booksmart is really great, and I need to get on that, because she was great. They had the two guys chasing the car down. That's what it is. Margaret Qualley and Geraldine, they get a car and drive it to Florida, and it's like some service, but the car was someone else's, and there's something in the trunk that they're not supposed to see. They try to track them down before they find out what's in the trunk of the car. A bunch of weirdness happens, kind of similar to Burn After Reading. I know when Burn After Reading came out, a lot of people weren't too hot on it, but like over time, it kind of, I think, picked up a little bit. Maybe this will do the same, maybe it won't, but there's a lot of similarities between this and Burn After Reading. Yeah, overall, I dug it, but it's far from one of my favorite Coen Brothers movies.
Rating?
Probably go 3 stars on this.
3 stars for Eric Holmes and Drive Away Dolls. As of this recording, it's currently playing in select theaters. And by the way, it's Tomato Meter, Rotten Tomatoes, 63%, but the audience score is 36% on Drive Away Dolls. Join us on our Cinematics Facebook group if you want to see more, really, some vitriol levied at Drive Away Dolls. I think Jason Kleberg from the Force 5 podcast was mentioning it might be as well.
Oh, yeah. He called it one of the worst movies this year.
Of the year. So we'll see. I don't know.
Well, actually, we've been watching a lot of bangers. It might be, but I'm trying to think. There had to have been something worse than that. But
Yeah. Okay. So The Last Brunch, yeah. Jim Cummings, new short. It's on Vimeo. Bruce, Eric, what do you think of it? It's like only 11 or 14 minutes.
So have you ever watched the TV show I Think You Should Leave?
No. Never.
This is like a 11-minute sketch from I Think You Should Leave. This thing is hilarious. Bruce, I'll let you say.
No, I mean,
say.
I don't know much to say. I don't think I'd really want to heartily describe it because it's so short. You should watch it. We don't want to give stuff away. Let's just say it's two couples at a brunch and it gets awkward and strange very quickly. And I guess I would say one thing. Jim Cummings is not in it, which is unusual.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to watch it. And I don't know about you. I mean, I enjoyed it thoroughly, put it that way. But it was interesting to me to wonder, like, which character would he play? I'm pretty sure he'd play the guy with the phone. But
yeah, definitely that guy.
I was thinking the whole time, like, which one's he going to play? And wondering how it would be different if he played it. But I really enjoyed this.
What's the other guy? Was that PJ McCabe?
That might have been, actually, now that you say that. I didn't think about that, but...
No, it's starring Bridge Stewart, Dustin Hann, Taylor Mizziak, Julia Bales, Haley Rose, and Max Phil. So I don't think he's in this one.
Well, PJ McCabe's in it, and he looks like the other guy, because he's not in the top build, but there's not another guy in the top build.
Hmm. Yeah.
Because there's two couples, a guy and girl couple, and they're both sitting at opposite ends of the table. I think PJ McCabe's the one that comes in late, I think.
And this is,
if not, he looks a lot like him.
And once again, just basic filmmaking. I mean, there is a final shot at the brunch, and then a final shot after the brunch, and that's how you put a button on a short like this for sure. It's pretty great, fantastic.
Yeah, it's kind of like the Mark Bernardin short. I talked about, well, didn't really talk about it. I just said it's out, go watch it. But yeah, similar to that, like this is 11 minutes, just go watch it. Like we can tell you what's in it, but it's 11 minutes, just watch it. There's no reason not to. And it's very funny. And if you like the show, I Think You Should Leave, this would fit right well into that because it's got that kind of off sort of humor.
Okay, so that is Jim Cummings' latest short. It is The Last Brunch, available on Vimeo. Just Google and you can find it. Now, The Artifice Girl. Bruce, what can you tell us about this movie? Joseph Bridges last week actually posted on the Cinematics Facebook group and he said the biggest compliment, said everyone, he doesn't see anyone in the Facebook group actually not liking this movie. That is the highest praise I think you can give any kind of movie. If everyone's going to love it, I don't even... 4-star Greg doesn't even me. I don't even say that. So does this movie work? Bruce, The Artifice Girl, what is it about?
Well, I would say yes, for sure. This is going to be a hard one because I don't want to say a whole lot about it. I'm guessing that Eric and you would both agree. We'll talk a little bit about it, but it's there's so much to be discovered here. Let's just say it starts out with two, what do you want to call them?
Special it
agents?
Says here.
Agents.
Yeah, the special agents, yes.
Two agents bringing a guy in for questioning, and you have a feeling it's kind of like bringing him in for, is he doing online, like, is it pedophilia? Is he, what's he doing? They're basically going to get him in trouble for what he's doing. That's what you think. And then it takes a turn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which, very good, Bruce.
It takes a turn and you discover he's doing something different than ever you may think he's doing.
Right.
Which totally recontextualizes the situation. I can see Eric's gonna come in with something here. Go for it.
I was going to say, I'm looking at the IMDb. It says exactly what he's there for. So I think we can say it.
Not really. After teaming up with the program's troubled developer, we won't. I mean, I think the first act, I think, Bruce, what you were saying was kind of cool. We can say that they team up with a troubled developer. They soon find that the AI is rapidly advancing beyond its original purpose. So,
okay, I thought that's what you were dancing around. It says it right there on the
AI. AI stuff, yeah. So this movie's The Artifice Girl. You could call it the AI Girl. So the issue is about AI. What is it? Can AI do this to help with online problems, with maybe predators on the internet? That's right. A premise behind The Artifice Girl. It's broken down into three chapters. It's directed and written by Franklin Rich. Lance Henriksen makes an appearance in the movie, and I haven't seen a ton of Lance Henriksen movies lately, and from my recollection, it's just a really awesome performance from Lance Henriksen. Well, don't want to say who he plays, but he has some really good stuff in the movie. And the person who plays Cherry, Tatum Matthews, aka the Artifice Girl, she's fantastic in this movie. This movie is exposition laden, and it's one of these things with so much dialogue, could be boring, but it's completely not. What did you think of this movie, Eric?
I love this movie. You have like the short story, I Have No Mouth and I Must Scream. The basic of that story is an AI trapped inside of a computer, and it's angry at humanity and wants to torture them. That's what AM does throughout the entire short story. Trying to think of other, like, I guess Sim1 kind of talked a little bit about AI. I think this is, like, as far as like AI goes, it really digs deep into the ethics of AI. They do it in Star Trek: The Next Generation with Data. You're an android. Like, what rights do you have? You know, what feelings do you have? Are those feelings even real? Like, these are all questions and ideas brought up in plenty of sci-fi. This is the one where I think they really put in the elbow grease and actually ask a bunch of questions, answer a bunch of questions. You know, have different characters have different perspectives on the answers to those questions. Like, does A equal B? Yeah, I think so. Well, I don't. Well, why not? And then you listen to both of them go back and forth, and it's like, I mean, you both have a point. And I think with technology going the way it is, this is something that's we'll probably have to deal with at some point. You know, when technology gets to the point where artificial intelligence appears to be sentient, do we have to start rethinking of them, the AI, as tools? And do we have to start thinking of them as people? Do they have rights? I don't know. But I just love how they just go. And that's just one question. Like, there's like a whole wide thing. And the fact that they can get all that done in such a short amount of time. And I think that's why it's not boring. It's people talking, yeah, but the stuff they're talking about is damn interesting and really kind of tickles your brain. And I think an explosion or a chase scene or a car crash or something would just be like, yeah, let's get back to the issue at hand here.
Yeah.
This thing's fantastic.
And the genius, I think, is by picking really quick, and then I'll shut up. But
no,
the genius is with AI, and right now there's so much negativity around AI, right? So it's hard to get people on board to like discuss the ethics around how you treat or consider AI. So they pick a use for AI here that almost everyone could get behind right out of the gate, right? We're going to use AI to catch online predators of children. Like, who isn't behind that? So by doing that, that's kind of you have to have a basic thesis, right, for your movie that everyone will go, okay, cool. And that just kind of generates all the conversation, because if you already assume that you're doing it for using this AI for a good reason, then you have to really argue the ethics besides that. Whereas if you picked it for, we're going to create AI to, I don't know,
write a screenplay
or whatever, then people could automatically be against it just because of the very nature of what you're using the AI for. So I think that is a really, really smart choice right out of the gate, like writing wise. And this movie is all about, like you said, about ideas. And I thought that's why you would probably really like it, because it's not a courtroom movie, but it has
a back and forth, the debates and the arguments and whatnot.
It debates the ideas, and it deals with ethics, and it deals with right and wrong, and it deals with morality in the same way that courtroom movies that are done right do. So It tickles the same part of your brain, I think.
And I think where the Artifice Girl, like the problems I mentioned that I had with Late Night with the Devil, even though that was enjoyed Late Night with the Devil, but I had issues with the skeptic there because I didn't believe the arguments. Like I don't believe that that's the steel man that you write for that character. The Artifice Girl has characters that do things I kind of side with, and they have things that I don't side with, but I think all of those arguments are sound. Like it's not the writer setting up a straw man that another character can knock it down. There's none of that here.
Right. So the Artifice Girl, again, a lot of exposition is broke down in 3 chapters. And what's great about it is, bottom line, it talks about all these issues, but it engages the audience into the actual story. It pulls you in to what they're feeling, what they're going through, the issues. This is a great gem that we unearthed this year. And it's one of those things I wish, if I could turn back time, I had the email about the Artifice Girl, would have loved to have interviewed the director. Maybe Eric would have loved to have done that, as well as the actors. I haven't seen, other than Lance Henriksen, I don't know any of these actors. And they all did fantastic work in this movie. Also,
Tatum Matthews.
Right, yeah. Mentor Tatum Matthews.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Like, She's amazing.
Well, I mean, we're talking about more her in spoilers for sure, but okay. She was all fantastic in this.
They're all good. And there are surprises throughout the narrative as well. So yeah. we'll get to that in a second. But yeah, ratings on, by the way, The Artifice Girl, I saw it on Hoopla. Where did you guys see the movie?
It was one of those, Tubi or Hoopla.
Something. I think I saw it on Tubi, I think. Okay. Yeah, Tubi, I think.
Okay, Tubi. Yeah, Tubi, not bad. They're okay with at least if I recall, they're not bad with the commercials. And Hoopla, the great thing about that, if you have a library card and you can actually, I think for me, being in Los Angeles library card members, you can actually get this movie and without watching any commercials. But either way, even with the commercials, it's worth it on Tubi. And who knows, if they ever come out with a Blu-ray on this, I'll buy it. It's that good. My rating for this is 4.5 stars for The Artifice Girl. What about you, Bruce?
I was starting at 4.5, but the ideas are so good and I was so engaged by it. I think I'm going to go 5. I think it needs to be 5.
5 stars
for
Bruce
Perkins. People need to watch this one.
Okay. Eric Holmes?
I can't remember what my top 5 was for 2022, but I have a hard time believing this would not have been in my top 3 favorite movies of that year.
Right.
6.9 stars all the way.
Yeah.
A little girl. It's 5 stars. It's 5 stars.
5. right. 5 stars. 5 stars from Eric Holmes. Yes, of course.
But it's really 6.9 because it's that good.
It's quite the banger. Yes. Again, Eric was mentioning 2022. I think that's when it was, when it says on IMDb 2022. It was actually released in 2023. We're talking about here in 2024. Oh. No. Here's the thing. That's with indie projects.
Yeah.
No matter how good you are.
There was the same deal with Rebel. Anderson was talking about that on the Film Ball. Like Rebel would have been, but like Rebel's marked as a 2022 release.
Crazy. Who knows? Yeah. Rebel. I still haven't seen Rebel. My bad on that.
Rebel is great. Oh my God. Rebel is so good.
We are closing the show. Oh, okay. We are closed. I don't care. I'm not going to listen to you guys because we're going to close the show with Bruce Perky's review of Mary Magdalene. I'm Catholic. I still haven't seen the movie, but I'm giving it 5 stars. How's that? I'm giving it 5 stars.
Sure.
Yeah, because
you just have faith, right? That you're doing it out of faith.
I am praying.
Go ahead, mark that down.
As a Catholic, I am praying that Bruce Perky gives the much needed, have faith in cinema, Bruce Perky. Have faith in Mary Magdalene. She was a very close friend of Jesus Christ, and she helped lead him to that salvation. Okay, so think about that when you do the review. It's directed by Garth Davis from Lion, a very internationally revered film, Lion. So please, hurl your beautiful honeyed words and praise for Mary Magdalene.
Figs and dates.
By the way, yes, and by the way, one of you love Boys Afraid and you love your Joaquin Phoenix. So I'm assuming Joaquin Phoenix is perfect as Jesus Christ and his companion Rooney Mara as wonderful as Mary Magdalene. Do we have to review this? Go ahead.
Chiwetel Ejiofor is in here too as Peter. Tahar Rahim as Judas. Yeah, we named them all or most of them. So basically the interesting approach here is that you're looking at, well, I think in recent years, and you can, as a Catholic, you can probably say a lot more about this than I can. But in recent years, I think she has been sanctified. She's considered now the Apostle of the Apostles, all this kind of stuff. Names are put out there. But for quite a while, there was different versions of Mary Magdalene where they were putting her as a prostitute and all kinds of stuff. So I think that has been rehabilitated anyway. But this movie kind of takes that from the get-go and kind of starts with her and showing her in her life as not really kind of going with the status quo. Like, they want to marry her and they have a person picked out for her, and she's just not going for it. And of course, Jesus is nearby and he's teaching, and a lot of people are interested in what he's teaching. And of course she is as well. And she ends up following along with the other disciples and becoming part of his crew. Boy, though, this movie is pretty inert. Here's the problem with this movie. Well, here's a good thing about this movie. If you're looking to fill out your Jesus events bingo card, you know, you want to make a drinking game, you know, you want to, you know, does he make the blind see or raise the dead? Does he, I don't know, does he go and throw the money changers tables over? What else do you want to pick?
Bruce, that alcohol you're mentioning is holy wine. Okay. I take that holy wine with my communion every week, sir.
I think
it does get you messed up though. It's good stuff. It does.
I think you can get pretty drunk off of this movie if you do that as your drinking game, because you're going to hit all the points.
Drink the wine, snort the ashes. It's
Bruce,
a party.
In all fairness though, me being a Catholic, and I am Catholic, and it's all a joke, but
yeah,
the movie, I looked at the trailer. No disrespect. This movie looks really boring.
It's kind of boring, yeah. And I think this is one of those, they had all the ingredients kind of movies, but it for some reason doesn't work. And I think part of it is it feels like a movie that's trying to both be reverent, but also trying to kind of push the edges a little bit, but it's not willing to go either way. You know what I mean? And I think that it could have pushed the edges a little bit and still kept that reverence. Like, it obviously is not going to try to blow up the story of Jesus Christ. It's not trying to say that any of those things aren't true, but it also doesn't really want to get into her character. Like, it doesn't want to stray very far from the story. It doesn't want to stray very far from his story. So what that means is you don't actually get deep into who, because it feels like it wants to be, who were these people that became these monumental figures in world history and religion? And it's like, it wants to do that, but it doesn't, it's not brave enough to do that. So in this sense, you get this kind of surface, really, it feels very personal, but doesn't really do anything. It just becomes the events that you kind of know. So, you know.
Is this kind of like a Napoleon, where it's like, okay, we know the person, we know the story, but the movie's not really saying anything. They're just like, here's Napoleon doing the Napoleon things.
Kind of, yes. Mm, the most interesting thing in the whole movie, the most interesting thing, and I don't know if this is a version of the Judas story that's told. I don't remember it being one, but the idea of Judas in this one is very interesting and could have been expanded upon more too. And the idea here is, because you know, the idea of Judas essentially betrays him and sells him out, and he becomes...
Bruce, that's a spoiler, Bruce.
It sure is.
I'm glad you laughed at that, Eric, because I always nail Eric, and I apologize to you, Eric.
You nail him? That's really insensitive, sir.
I told you, drink the wine, snort the ashes, and Greg had a party.
That's another spoiler with the nails thing, Bruce.
So the idea here is really great, though, that Judas, they're becoming true believers. Actually, it was kind of funny watching this after Dune, too. But Judas has, you know, become like a true believer, right? But he's so much of a true believer, he's like, Jesus, you've shown us you can do all these things, you do miracles. Let's do it. Let's get the rapture.
On the road. Okay.
Let's get the rapture going.
Yeah. Okay.
So
I'm on board with that. Yeah.
So essentially he thinks that by, and I don't, once again, I don't think this is canon at all, but I think it was very interesting. He thinks definitely that by selling him
maybe MCU canon,
by selling him out, he thinks that Jesus is going to be forced to bring the rapture down.
Oh, that's interesting.
Jesus won't allow himself to be tortured and killed for no reason, right? Because he doesn't understand the bigger reason.
Oh, that's so very interesting.
He's thinking, oh, wow, you know, now Jesus isn't going to let himself get murdered for no reason. He's going to want to have the word get out there. He's going to create the rapture now. He thought he was hastening the rapture. So then he feels horrible when, you know, obviously crucifixion occurs. So, and that leads him to, like, you know, feeling like he's betrayed him fully and all that stuff. So I thought that was really interesting, and stuff like that could have made this a fascinating movie. But yeah,
and again, Joaquin Phoenix, Rooney Mara, I'm assuming they're doing good performances.
Joaquin's, okay. I think he's just a little miscast. Joaquin as Jesus is a little miscast. I'm
what about Rooney?
Rooney's great. She's fantastic.
Yeah. She's always good. You know, right. You know, you put her in a Fincher film, you put her in a Todd Haynes film, she's going to be amazing, right? So
you got a Chiwetel Ejiofor in that.
Yeah, he's good. He doesn't have a lot to do.
He's right there. Jesus. Chiwetel Ejiofor is Jesus.
Honestly.
That would have been interesting as well.
Yeah. It would have been better casting, honestly.
Yeah. Okay.
But I mean, he wasn't, he was just like one of those things where you see him and you're like, okay, this is Joaquin. Sorry. It's Joaquin with a beard. Let's get over this.
All right. So that is Mary Magdalene. I don't know how you saw it, Bruce. And if you had to pay for it, I apologize personally.
No, it was on one of the channels. I forget which one.
Very, very good. So Mary Magdalene currently streaming wherever. Just go to justwatch.com to find out if, who knows, maybe you might disagree with Bruce. You might like Mary Magdalene, again, directed by Garth Davis, starring Rooney Mara and Joaquin Phoenix. What is your rating on Mary Magdalene?
I'll probably go 2.5. Easter's coming. Hey, watch it.
Okay. Honestly, would you say someone, I mean, if you're of that Christian faith, is that worth seeing, maybe?
It's inoffensive, I think. I think there's some interesting stuff in there. I think give it 30 minutes, and if you're just not feeling it, bail, but it's not terrible. You can see I almost tipped. Like if it had been a little more brave, I think it would have been better.
Yes.
You know.
Yeah, you know who I'd like to see as Jesus? David Desmalchian from Late Night with the Devil. That would be very interesting.
If he ever decides he wants to stop acting, I hope he gets into late night television.
He's so good.
I would watch that every night. I would get cable against. I can't remember the last time I saw something on TV that wasn't a football game. But
before we go, the interesting fact regarding David Desmalchian, and before we get to your what's in the box pick, Bruce Perky, David Desmalchian back in the day wrote a column or not a letter or something, some kind of research material on, and he sent it to Fangoria, and he was talking about late night hosts from the 70s. So it's sort of an interesting synchronistic moment. And Desmalchian is a huge fan of that whole era and Fangoria and whatnot. So anyways, Late Night with the Devil. So
makes me want to watch Voyager of the Demeter again.
Yes. And oh, what's in the bleeping box? Bruce Perky for next week.
I was picking it while you were doing stuff.
In two weeks,
what's cool about Voyager of the Demeter?
Yes.
I'm starting to hear, like, I remember when it came out, everyone was crapping on it.
Yes.
It's starting to come around. Like, people are starting to watch it and dig it. And I love that.
And Eric, you were one of the first people to really say, hey, there were a lot of negativity from the critics. And then you just, hey, look, this is actually a good movie. And you were one of the first people.
And we're doing it again with Sleeping Dogs.
And Sleeping Dogs, yes, me and you.
Hop on the Holmes bandwagon.
And I remember a couple of years ago when I was telling you and Bruce that Don't Look Up is a movie that should be nominated for Best Picture, Eric. Remember that? Were those two things with Don't Look Up? Yeah. Remember that? I was.
Yeah. And what happened?
That was Eric Holmes.
Bandwagon.
Yes, Eric Holmes gave the only great review, wonderful positive review of Don't Look Up. Me and Bruce were always wrong. Anyways.
Well, you're not always wrong. When you agree with me, you're not wrong.
Throw some right into the mix, Bruce, with your with your box. What's in the bleeping box, Bruce?
Well, this is a movie I haven't seen for a long time, and one of you might want to hop on this with me.
Okay.
And that is The Phantom of the Paradise.
Nice.
I've never heard of it. Is that a popular? Who's that? Who's that, Eric? Is that a movie? Is that Michael Crawford? What is that? Phantom of the Paradise.
Oh, sorry. I was.
What is that movie? I never heard of it. Bruce, can you tell me what it is? Who directed that? What is that? What? John Badham?
I
don't know.
The guy that did Black Dahlia in the. Your favorite director, and I can't remember.
I don't know if you can see it. I got my poster up on the wall there.
De Palma. Jesus, my brain sucks.
No. I'm kidding. Brian De Palma, my favorite director of all time. And I don't know. If I ever had kids, I would make sure that their favorite director is Brian De Palma. I love De Palma. I am a crazy, crazy old man. That is Phantom of the Paradise next week. And yes, Bruce Perky, I will hop on and I will watch it. Not next week, in 2 weeks from now, because next week is our Patreon week, but we'll be ready for Phantom of the Paradise. And I'm sure, Eric Holmes, you will be joining in as well, because why not a rewatch, right? Paul Williams score. What else? I mean,
to get out my album. I have a vinyl album of that thing, too.
By the way, your vinyl album is probably worth a lot of money. You should check it out on Amazon or eBay, and because I know the CD is worth a lot, I think. Paul Williams, I love that movie so much, Phantom of the Paradise. You love that, too, Eric Holmes, right?
Phantom of the Paradise?
Yeah, of course, right?
I don't think I've seen it. I'll have to watch it and find out.
It's what? So weird.
Okay.
Like Rocky Horror Picture Show and Phantom of the Paradise are like the two, what I think of as like the two glam weirdo movies from the early 70s. Yeah.
Okay. That is it for this episode. I know that was a lot of stuff, guys. Hit us up and join our Patreon, join our Cinemax Facebook group. Most importantly, we'd love to hear what you think of any of these movies that we've covered. Final thoughts, Eric Holmes.
Yeah, we got a banger coming up next week for sure. And an interview with the director and subject of said banger. So
okay,
very, very excited for that.
Okay, let me transition to Bruce. What is your final thoughts?
Oh boy, I'm not thinking straight. Hey, go watch The Last Brunch. I mean, come on. We mentioned a lot of the stuff, but this is like 11 minutes and it's free. Go watch The Last Brunch.
Yeah.
And then when you're done with that, go watch Splinter. Another great short.
Yeah, okay.
Then go watch The Artifice Girl.
Okay.
And then watch Artifice Girl and go, oh, so good. And by the way, Joseph Bridges, thank you.
Thank you, Joseph Bridges.
That's probably one of my favorite movies, just period. But yeah, that was a good one.
Bruce, you mentioned 11 minutes and free. I'm wonderful listeners. I'm 5 minutes and I'm free too. So we'll see you that. I can't believe I'm transitioning to that to say. Anyways, here's Claire.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for joining Cinematic.